Broadcasting from the confines of the abandoned radio station in the secluded ghost town of High Strangeness, it's just outside of Area 51. It's time for full disclosure of the topics they told us were off limits. Hello, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM from the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky. That's home of the Erickson Project. Matilda, you know that one? The Waverly Hills Sanatorium. The Popelick Monster or Goatman could be the same. We're in a pretty scary area of the world. Come on down and visit us. We're also very hospitable. It's that Southern charm we got. Tonight, you've heard of the Patterson-Gimlin film, right? Well, we have the Gimlin here tonight. Iconic, the legendary Mr. Bob Gimlin, first-time guest. Looking forward to that, and I know a lot of you also are. And another winner here, founder and owner of Team Sasquatch USA. Dr. Matthew A. Johnson's going to be with us tonight, and he's had a lot of experiences, but we're also going to talk about the controversy of Bigfoot being flesh and blood or something other than that. So time now to turn off the lights and join me for another interesting evening of conversation, much needed education, and the chance that we might get a little closer to the truth of what lurks amongst us and what is beyond. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And you're listening to Coast AM. Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, and I am extremely excited about tonight's show. I've interviewed so many people in my career, big, gigantic people in all sorts of genres. And however, I'm a little nervous tonight. I cannot believe how much Facebook has lit up with the guy that we have on next. And that is first-time guest here with Coast to Coast. I can't believe that either. That's amazing. But the iconic Bob Gimlin. Yay! And the crowd roars. The most iconic and most loved face and name in the Bigfoot world. He's the Gimlin in the famous Patterson-Gimlin film. And Bob, I want to very much welcome you to the show first. How are you?
Thank you, Connie, for having me on tonight. I'm doing fine.
It's so good to hear that voice. And I got to tell you, Bob, I am extremely nervous with you tonight because I'm just excited to have you here.
Well, hey, don't be nervous now. We'll get along just fine. Everything's going to be just fine. And I sure do appreciate you having me on tonight. And I hope the listeners out there are happy for what they hear. And I'll tell you what, it's just I can hear you really plain. Weather's great up here, and I don't know if people are aware of where I'm talking from. I'm talking from the state of Washington in Yakima County, which is a central Washington area, agriculture area. So we'll go on from there. Connie, whatever you got for the program, and it's sure a pleasure to be on here tonight.
Well, we appreciate that as well. You have a wonderful voice, and anybody I've ever spoken to about you, they all love you, male and female alike, and they all call you the charmer.
Well, thank you. Thank the folks very much. I like to talk to people, and I like to treat people like I like to be treated. So, I don't meet strangers. I just meet people and visit with them, talk with them, whatever subject that they want to talk about that I'm familiar with. And of course, I'm familiar mostly with the Bigfoot phenomena, and have been for the last 49 years. Since October 20th, 1967 in Northern California.
And why don't you start telling us about that? You know, I know there's a lot that we can talk about, but let's just go ahead and get into that because I know that this is a late time for you and that you've taken a special extra nap for us. So let's go back to to October.
Yep. I did, Connie. I had a pretty heavy day on a quad up in the mountains with my friends, and the weather was beautiful up here today. But I will start, Connie, whereabouts would you like for me to start about the filming of the of what Roger Patterson and I did in October 20th, 1967?
Well, let's start there. You're together, and what is the plan? The plan is you and Roger are going to put together a documentary.
Yeah, well, you know, mostly that was Roger's plan. He asked me to assist him if I had, you know, if I had the time. I had a steady job, of course, and so weekends and in the summer months, of course, in the evenings was about the only real time that I had to contribute to Roger's documentary that he was wanting to put together. What Roger's idea was to generate enough money to do an expedition in Northern California in the same area that the famous Tom Slick, the multimillionaire from Texas Airlines, did an expedition in the 50s. So there had been lots of evidence in that area in Northern California, in the Little Creek, and in that particular area there. And so Roger wanted to generate enough money with a documentary, and so he was getting a few of us up in this part of the country to help him out. And I had grew up tracking animals and hunting and actually living most of the time in the woods when I was off work and had the time to do it. I grew up that way.
Well, you're like a real cowboy. I mean, you're a real rancher, and you break horses, and you're also Native American, so that's just your world.
Yeah, it certainly was, Connie, and yes, and at that time, you know, I was, I turned 36 years old October 18th down there in Northern California, so yes, that's what I did for a living. I worked on steady jobs, but I also rode young horses for people and myself. And I actually met Roger rodeoing because I did some rodeoing also. And I call it amateur rodeoing because it was nothing like the PRCA rodeos of today. It was the smaller rodeos around, but we had a lot of fun and got lots of bruises, and, like anybody in the rodeo business does.
Yeah, I think anybody that does that's a little crazy, but they love living on the edge for sure. So that's how you met Roger.
Yes, it was. That's how I met Roger, and we became good friends, and we both had families at that time. Our children were about the same. Well, I think Roger's was a little younger than mine, and he had three and I had four. And so that rodeoing thing, I couldn't take it. Well, I took it serious, but I couldn't really get that serious because going to work on Monday morning is a sore you could hardly get there. I knew I had to go to work on Monday morning to provide for the family. And I guess Roger probably did too, but I didn't live close to him at that time, so I really didn't know about what his jobs were or anything. But I was usually working construction, so it would be, you know, heavy, hard work. And it was pretty hard to go to work on Monday morning when every part of your body was hurting.
Well, you're a pretty tough guy. I know that you played high school football. You boxed in the Navy.
Yes, I did.
That's amazing. Then, like, I heard you got a lot of friends that talk to me. I love it. I heard that in, I think it was 53, there was a car accident. And that really took a toll on you.
In 1952. Well, yeah, I ended up, I spent the next 2 years after the car accident in a hospital in Corona,
wow,
California. And, you know, they told me all kinds of things that I wouldn't be able to do. And so I'm kind of a stubborn guy when people tell me I can't do this and can't do that. And so when I was released from the hospital after 2 years of being in there, I just decided that they told me a panel of doctors told me, well, you'll never be able to do physical work. You'll have to be a bookkeeper or an accountant, because I did excel when I did the GED test, you know. So I said, well, I'm not an inside person. And they said, well, you're going to have to be. And I thought, well, no, I'm not going to be. So I went, right after I got out of the hospital, I went to work doing some heavy lifting and things the best I could, because I was still, you know, fairly weak from being broke up so bad and staying in the hospital that many years or that many months, you know. And so, but anyway, I just wanted to prove that I could do it. And so I did, and I kept right on going, and I did a lot of things that some people just would never do. You know, I raced motorcycles, and I rode rodeo, and I did whatever I wanted to do, mostly. As long as my body would hold up, I would do it.
And it's still going strong. And, you know, that's the way you got to live life. You know, you got to take it one day at a time. And I agree with you. When somebody says, hey, you can't do this, you know, that's when you're like, oh, you know, I'm definitely going to do it now. I know at one point in my television career, I got to be, I did four shows on the major network primetime. And that's kind of a big deal if you're in the television world. You know, it's like, okay, I did that. I did reach that peak at one point in my life. So you're like, okay, you know, God, you can take me now kind of thing. But that show happened to be, it was a reality show with stuntmen and daredevil guys. So you had the professionals and then like the crazy guys working together. But the main host on that show was Evel Knievel. And that's somebody that you know, right? Or knew?
Very well. Yeah. Bob, before he became Evel Knievel, of course he was Bob Knievel to me, we raced motorcycles on the same at the same time. And at one time, Bob Knievel got a hold of me. He wasn't Evel Knievel yet. And he said, hey, Bob Gillen, he said, you're about as wild and crazy as I am. He said, would you like to go daredevil? And he said, we can make a lot of money at it. And I said, well, thank you, Bob, for the offer. But there's a friend of mine here in the Yakima area named Bob Keith. And he's riding through the Ring of Fire and, you know, smaller stuff, of course, than Bob Knievel ever did. And I said, I'm loaning him money to survive on. And so I said, but I can't do that. I've got a family and I've got four children. Well, Bob was somewhat younger than me at that time. And next thing I knew, he was Evel Knievel, making more money than I even dreamt was ever possible.
But you got that right.
I never regretted that because, you know, Bob's gone now, and he was a great guy. The people that got to know him knew that he, when he said he was going to do something, he'd give it a try. You know, when he knew, he didn't know he was going to get broke up, but he kept getting broke up. And so we had a lot in common there, too, in a way, because I kept getting broke up on horses, wild horses, and horses had been spoiled from other people that, you know, had problems, and I was going to straighten them out. Yeah, old Bob's going to straighten them out. Well, most of the time I got them going pretty good, but they got me in the hospital a few times. And in fact, I'm still, well, I quit last year because I had an accident last year. But hey, Connie, I'd like to just jump back a ways, if you don't mind, about my high school football.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Hey, so I'm really still proud because I think there's only two of us left that played on that team, and that was in 48 and 49. And we had a coach that just come out of the Marine Corps from World War II, and he's a physical ed trainer in the Marine Corps. He drilled us and drilled us and drilled us, and we did the thing that's most incredible, hasn't been done in the Wapato area, I don't even know, in the state of Washington. We played football and wasn't scored on for 2 years, two seasons.
Wow.
They never, ever scored on us.
So, that's incredible.
That was something that I never thought much about at the time we did it. And but now, you know, as you get older and you watch pro football and you watch high school football, college football, you realize that that was something that was really unusual. And so to play two seasons and not be scored on was unreal.
It's absolutely unreal. I mean, what the Miami Dolphins did it. They were the undefeated team, and they're still known as the undefeated team. And you know, you should have got that credit from back then, because they still get credit for that.
Oh. We weren't only undefeated. We were unscored on.
That's incredible. That's...
No one ever made a touchdown against
us. Well, what was your position?
I was a right guard.
Okay.
on the line.
Tough all the way through. I tell you, well, you know, a minute ago you said Ring of Fire, which when I very first talked to you on the phone, I guess last week or so, I said, you know what, your voice reminds me of someone that to me was somebody I got to interview. And he was exactly everything anybody's ever said. You know, there's a lot of people that you meet in the world and people say this, this, and this about them, or, you know, the public or the news media or their PR gives them one, you know, kind of look and presence, and then you meet them in person and it's totally different. But the one person that I met that was everything that anyone ever said about him was Johnny Cash. And you came off to me on the phone just like Johnny did when I met him. Just his presence was wonderful, his voice, he cared, he engaged, and you gave me the same feeling. And I told you that, and then you went, oh yeah, John.
Yeah.
So you knew Johnny and June.
Thank you, Connie. Yes, I was fortunate enough to meet John and June and work right with them when they come to Yakima to put on a show. I was in a reserve deputy in the sheriff's posse here in the Yakima County. And so we did guard for celebrities when they'd come to fair to do their show here in Yakima. So when John and June came to Yakima, I was assigned to be back with them back on the behind there. Back with the stage, and back of the stage when to watch, you know, take care of everything. And so it was really an honor to be able to meet John and June, as well as I met a lot of the entertainers that way when I was a reserve deputy, as a deputy sheriff, I mean a sheriff's posse member here in the Yakima. Basically, we were a riding group, horseback riding group, and competed with different events. But we also did guard detail at the fairs when entertainers would come here.
Oh, I see.
I was lucky enough to meet some really great entertainers. And, you know, Barbara Mandrell, and the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know, and
yep.
Helen Reddy. And actually, I went with Helen Reddy to catch her Learjet out of the Yakima Air Terminal. And, you know, it was an honor to be there with those people and to visit with John Cash and June backstage, just like you and I are talking here tonight, was really quite an honor.
It was with me as well. They are really down-to-earth people, just wonderful to talk with, and I'm glad that I got to meet them as well. Now, you just mentioned something briefly about you were recently hurt again. I think you had like a bone coming out of your skin, yet you still drove yourself to the hospital.
Well,
you are one tough dude.
Well, thank you, Connie. My wife calls it stubborn.
I agree.
You know, I've never, I've had a lot of broken bones from being slammed with horses and motorcycles, but I never gave into it much because I just kept saying to myself, I don't have time to be busted up. But this time, it hit me pretty solid. Shot my right collarbone right on out of the flesh, and I called it hide, and the doctor looked at me kind of funny, and I said, that bone shot right on up out of my hide. And the doctor looked at me and shook his head, and he said, you dadgum cowboys are really something different. And I said, well, you know, that old saying, cowboy up, I said, I learned that when I was pretty young because I started riding horses at a very young age, catching wild horses off the reservation over here as early as a 12-year-old, and kept right on doing it right up until I went in the Navy in 1950. I went in the service in 1950 during the Korean conflict and served there aboard a destroyer in Korea and Task Force 77 part of the time, and then they would assign us a lone duty along knocking bunkers and railroad tracks out and so forth up and down the coast of Korea. But I liked the duty. I liked being there because, you know, when you're that age, you think, well, yeah, you're defending your country. And whether we were or were not, I don't know. You know, you don't know after you get a little older, a little smarter. But I was there and proud to be there. our ship got hit a few times, and a few of them got injured bad. In fact, we had some fatalities, actually, but I was lucky enough that I never got injured until I was back in the States in 1952, and the car wreck that you mentioned and we both talked about earlier. But, you know, I've had a very eventful life and enjoyed most of it and married a wonderful woman in 1964.
And she has done very well hanging in there with you. I praise her. Hey, more to come here with Bob Gimlin, and we're going to talk about Bigfoot when we come next. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis here, live from Louisville, Kentucky. And those of you single out there, those of you Coast listeners that are single, it's not going to be that way forever. You are not alone. I know that it's hard to meet people of like mind. And as soon as they know that you care to hear about or talk about 24/7 Bigfoot, ghost, UFO, hybrids, remote viewing, any of these really cool things that we all love, and they want to walk away when they hear it. No, let's find someone of like mind for you. George has put together something called Paranormal Dates, and that's where you can meet someone just like you that will want to talk about the same things that you heard on Coast the night before, right? Pretty good idea, huh? Well, it's free to sign up and check it out. Now, if you want to hang in there and go a little further and meet some people, use code GEORGE for a discount. It's available in Canada, too. We've got over 42,000 members in there. So lots of people to choose from. And if any one of you get married from it, we want to know. We want to know how it's going for you. So it's paranormaldate.com. You are not alone. You can go to the coasttocoastam.com website to read more about it. So check it out. And also, those of you that are into conspiracies, because you guys kind of stick out. You kind of got your own little crowd. Well, we've got something for you, too. You can check out conspiracydate.com. Now, coming up, Bob Gimlin and the Bigfoot story next here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. We're discussing the Patterson-Gimlin film with Mr. Gimlin himself right here live. Bob, can you, let's just start this right out. October 20th. 1967. How did that start?
Yes, Connie, I apologize for kind of getting off the subject, the main subject there.
No, we love you. No.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Well, Connie, if you will allow me, I will just start back when I first, I hadn't seen Roger for quite a few years, and one day I was pulling into a service station to get fuel, and I seen a little Plymouth pickup. I never knew they even made them. And I was kind of looking at it, walking around looking at it, and who walks out of the service station but Roger Patterson. And he says, well, oh, Bob, I haven't seen you for quite a few years now, and since I quit riding in the rodeos. And this must have been in 1960. Oh, must have been 64, I reckon, early 64 or late 64. And he said, I got something I want to show you. And he went over to this pickup and got a plaster cast out, walked over and said, this is a Bigfoot cast. And I said, well, it darn sure is, you know. And so he said, well, he said, I've been interested in this ever since I heard about the Slick Expedition, and I read the book of some of the things that they did, and Dr. Ivan Sanderson from over in the New York area had written this book, and he said, Dr. Sanderson talks about the Bigfoot and the different things, you know. And so I said, well, you know, Roger, I don't really have time to get involved in it because I'm riding horses, working on a steady job and everything. And he said, well, and I said, I'm riding a lot of young horses and I drive up into the mountains on weekends. And he told me where he lived. And he said, if stop by and pick me up and we'll load my horse in with yours. Well, and I'll ride up there with you on weekends in the mountains and camp out. And he'd bring these little cassette tapes, you know, that they, people probably don't even know what they are now, but and he brings a recorder with him, a battery-powered recorder, and around the campfires at night, well, he'd play these recordings of testimonials of people that had witnesses or had witness tracks and actually had seen them before, you know, but not anything close, but thought they or knew they existed, and they was a mystery part of Mount St. Helens over here. Well, people went up there and was up in that area, and it disappeared and never was heard of again. And so then he got aware of the Ape Canyon story, and him and one of his friends, well, I knew the guy too, Prentice Beck was the man's name, and they knew about his great uncle being in a nursing home over on the coast somewhere. So they went over and talked to him, and he told them the story about Ape Canyon and the miners up in there that had been run out by the Bigfoot people. I call them people. They called them creatures at that time. So that kind of got me interested in what was going on, and then I went along kind of about it for a while, and I'd meet Roger, and I'd go ride the horse. I would drive by his place, pick up horses with him, and he'd always have something new or another plaster cast to show me. So I thought, well, you know, I don't have really enough time to get involved in it, but I there must be something out there. These people aren't having this, and Mr. Slick must have not. He must have believed in it, or they would have had an expedition down there in the mid-50s. So I was going along with this pretty good until Roger asked me to get in to help him with that documentary that you and I talked about. Mm-hmm. And so I was working with him on that with some different guys up in this area. And then...
So Bob, you didn't believe at this point, right? You did not believe in...
I did not, no. Okay. I thought, well... they might exist, but you know, it's kind of far out for me to even believe in, because I'd been all my life in the mountains, and I'd never seen a track or never seen a Bigfoot, but I wasn't looking for them. You see, mm-hmm. there might have been a difference there if I'd have been aware of it and been looking for them, but I wasn't.
I agree. 'Cause
my main interest was tracking wild horses and tracking the kind of animals that I hunted. And up in this area, we have deer, elk, bear, cougar, and, you know, and bobcat and that sort of thing. Of course, we always have coyotes and that and those smaller animals. But I hunted the big game, the deer and the elk and the bear. So, I was real familiar with tracking. So that's what Roger wanted me to do at that time is... do the tracking part for his documentary. And also, I had Native American, I had costumes from doing shows with the Appaloosa group. At that time, I belonged to the Appaloosa Horse Club here in Idaho. And so I, then we got up, and that picture on the Argosy magazine is Roger and myself, and part of the Indian costume, that Native American costume that I used to show the Appaloosas. So that's where we started there. And so Roger asked me to go with him or take him over to the Mount St. Helens area and on a Labor Day weekend in 1967. And so I took him over there, and it started raining on Sunday morning. It started raining so dadgum hard. We'd rode out like that Friday evening, and that Saturday, and then Sunday it started that heavy rain. So everything we had was wet. So we loaded up and came back to the Yakima area. And I went back to work. I was doing a job they call hot roofing at that time. Replacing roofs on buildings and then doing structural work on new buildings with hot roof, which with hot asphalt. So I went back to work, and I think about 5 or 6 days, maybe a week, 2 weeks, Roger come driving in my driveway. I lived about 25, 30 miles from Roger and was all excited. He said, Bob, can you take me to Northern California? He said, they called me a few days ago and said that they put a piece of equipment back in the mountains where they had started building new roads on Friday evening before Labor Day weekend. And they came back on Wednesday morning or Tuesday morning to go to work after Monday off. And there was big tracks all around this piece of this tank that they put in there. And at the time, I thought it was a fuel tank and probably was, but I'm not sure what they've used it for. But anyway, shorten up the story a little bit. Roger wanted me to take him down there. I said, well, Roger, you know, I can't just quit my job and leave up here because I had horses and cattle and my wife worked all the time too. And so I have to get somebody to take care of him. But first I got to go talk to my boss about taking some time off from the job. So I went over and talked to my boss and he said, well, yeah, Bob, you're the last man to be hired. So when we slow down in the fall, when hot roofing slows down, you'll be the first man laid off. So he said, if you want to take a couple of weeks off, we don't have any really hot, really jobs that need to be done right away. He said, we've got some smaller jobs coming up, no big ones. But he said, if you want to take off a couple of weeks. So I told Roger, yeah, I'll haul you down to Northern California because if there's tracks there, I want to see them. I'd never seen a track out in a while. And so I got my little one-ton truck with a horse van on it, a dually one-ton Chevrolet with a horse van that I'd haul my horses around in. And we got everything lined up, and Roger arranged for different things. And he knew where to go down there because he'd never been there before. I mean, he'd been there before, and I'd never been there before. So he told me where to go, and we drove down there to this area and set up camp and rode. We got down there probably, it was either the last of September or the first of October. I don't remember which date for sure, which day of the week it was when we got there, but we did. We made camp across the creek from Bluff Creek, the little creek that run down through there. And we rode every day for miles and miles and miles around there. And by the time we got down there, these footprints that was around this piece of equipment, it had rained down there heavy like it rained over Mount St. Helens area that why we left there. So all I could see, it wasn't really an identifiable track. It was just big globs in the mud and the dirt there, which had been mud, you know. And so I was pretty disappointed about that because that was my main reason for taking Roger down there, to be able to see these tracks, these three different sizes of tracks around there. And the assumption was at that time that it was a male, female, and a youth because of three different sizes, and that's what the people that looked at them said that's probably what it was. Mm-hmm. So where we made camp was about a mile and a half from that piece of equipment. And that piece of equipment was up on the side of the mountain called Onion Mountain. If somebody's interested in the area and want to look that up, it would be called Onion Mountain. And so we rode and rode and rode and rode and and like I say, I was terribly disappointed in not being able to see these footprints. And on a Friday, I said, well, let's go ride further back, about 35 miles further back, Roger, than the area that we've been covering, making big circles every day and there. So we loaded a little bit of our gear on a little pack horse that he had there that he used to pack with, a little white, what they call POA ponies. Basically, they're a small Appaloosa, in my opinion, but they were bred up and called Ponies of America, POAs. And that was the one, that Roger always packed up here in the mountains. So we decided to pack him back that day. And that was a Saturday that we left out of there about, somewhere around 12, I think it was. And it was a beautiful fall sunshiny day, and the leaves were all turning red and orange on the maple trees and the smaller brush. And so we were riding out through there, and Roger had his camera out, taking pictures of this colorful leaves, and we had their sleeping bags and what gear we was going to camp out that Saturday night, back quite a little ways back, like 35 miles from where the truck was. Well, about 4.5 miles up the creek, we were just riding alongside the creek. We come around a bend in the creek, which, if people are familiar with a root system of a downfall tree, about is 8 to 10, 12 feet high, the roots and everything up high. The
Yikes.
Creek has rerouted itself around that downfall tree, which this all had been caused in the flood area in 63 and 64, where the whole coast down in that area of California was underwater, flooded, Yuba City and all of those. And that water that came down off the mountains had really tore up the land quite a little bit. And it also, I didn't know this, but it deposited a type of soil down in there, and there was a log jam across the canyon there was a log jam that jammed up. Well, this flood caused the soil to build up behind that log jam. And I didn't know none of this at the time until I found out later that that's what it was. But anyway, Bigfoot creature, or I'm calling it creature then, because that's all I called them then, was standing right alongside the creek. And, of course, Roger was riding in front of me about 2 or 3 horse lengths, which would be about 15, 20 feet, maybe a little less. I don't know. I wasn't paying that much attention to the exact footage, you know, from where he was riding in front of me on his little quarter horse cross between that and a Welsh pony. A small horse, but it was a waspy, kind of a rowdy little horse, and I have to be pretty careful, Connie, what I say, because I made the statement that Roger's horse blew up, and some lady said, "Bob, how many pieces?" Well, so I'm really careful, you know, Connie.
You
about
do. I understand.
So I say it got a little waspy, a little rowdy, and you know, when it first saw the creature standing across the creek, it was only about 80 to 90 feet from us at that time. And so Roger managed to get off, bail off the horse while it was jumping around and lunging, because Roger was a fairly agile rodeo man. And so he got his camera out, and I stayed on the big horse, and I just let go of the pack horse, because I'd been leading the pack horse all this time, because the big horse was a roping horse, and, you know, you could handle it a whole lot better than Roger's little horse. But anyway, I just stayed on the horse because I was trying to, I can't really believe my eyes at this time, you know. Here's this thing, and it starts walking away real slow-like. Well, it was covering ground fast, but it seemed to be walking fairly slow, or just kind of casual-like, but it was covering the ground really fast. Well, I never realized at that time. It didn't look like it was making long strides, but it was making long strides. Which the footstep was, at that time was like 42 to 47 inches every stride. And so this all happened really, really fast, Connie. I mean, it was leaving, and we were there, and Roger's horse ran off, and I let loose of the pack horse, and it ran off back down the creek. And I stayed on this big horse. And so Roger wanted to, he ran across the creek, stumbled, and it fell down because there was a little bank there, a little raise. He was looking through the camera, and he didn't see it, so he stumbled and fell down and kind of elbowed in the sand. And So he got up and went over and stabilized himself on a log. And here I'm sitting watching all this, and I think my horse was acting up, you know, pretty good too, but I was able to stay on it and hold it. And so Roger wanted to relocate and get closer because it was making kind of a not a circle, but kind of a moon-shaped trail along. The only way it could go, actually, unless it went up the bank, up a steep bank, and this was still yet all fairly level ground, but it, you know, it was a little uneven, logs and stuff here and there.
Well, hold it right there, Bob. We're going to come back. We've got to pay a few bills here, and we're going to come back and talk with you. The suspense builds. We all know the story, but it's great hearing it from the man. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM.